Seekers, Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're back in the buckle of the Bible Belt after spending this past weekend in Seattle. Thanks to everybody at KPTK and folks who showed up at the forum with all of us lefty talk show hosts. It was a fun time, a great occasion. We really do appreciate the courtesies that were extended to us and also the good time we had. Oh my God, we had fun. Do you know what this? Listen, I want you to hear something. Tell me if you know what this is. Listen. Do you have any idea what that is? If you can, there's no way we. All right, let me tell you. We don't have phone service tonight. There's something going on in Phoenix, so if you're listening to the program and you want to call in, yeah. You're just going to have to wait, okay? You can't call in tonight. It's a live program. We're here. We're really here. But phone problems, construction, not us, not Nova M, not KPHX, construction problems with the phone company. They have to dig a ditch. I guess that means no phone service. But anyway, while you are listening to the program, see if you can figure out what this is. I'll explain it to you later. Shut up. What do we got here? It's always hard coming back from one of these kinds of weekends to get back in the groove because the time is compressed. So much is packed into 48 hours. It's almost too offhand for me to say, hey, thanks everybody, we had a good time. There was so much more involved in the forum and in the discussion that we had on the stage. The six liberal talk show hosts and the MC or the moderator, Ron Reagan, and then 1,600 people in the audience. It was more than just, hey, we had a good time. Wasn't that fun? Oh. It really was. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? You know, the language is interesting, a good time, enlightening. It was enlightening to me. Usually when I get together with these other talk show hosts, I do learn something. I've said before, you don't have friends in the talk radio business because it's a solitary enterprise, and very seldom do we all get together. And that's true to an extent, but it's also true that your coworkers, your colleagues, even though we may not see each other, when we do get together, it is kind of like old home week. So it was nice seeing Stephanie and Randy and Rachel and Tom and Sam Cedar, and getting a chance to meet Ron Reagan. That was a lot of fun. So wherever we do one of these again, I think they're talking about maybe something in San Francisco. I'm not sure. We'll see what happens. While we were doing the event in Seattle, of course, the Saddleback Church. Is that what they call it, Saddleback Church? You know, I can't help it. I'm sorry. That just always sounds a little bit erotic to me. You know, Saddleback Church. What are they trying to tell us with that? You know, it's just, I don't know. There's just something about it that's not obscene, just a little erotic. Hey, where are you going tonight? Saddleback. Really? What are you going to do there? Who knows? And Rick Warren, the purpose-driven life guy, I know he is of the new group of evangelicals. That's what the press reports say. He's not the queers made me do it type, or the bombing of the United States on September 11th was as a result of God lifting the veil. You remember those psychopaths. Apparently Rick Warren is a new evangelical who believes what? I don't know. He's willing to talk about environmental degradation. He's willing to talk to his flock about poverty issues. You know, it is not a good thing. Jesus never said, let's all go get rich. Jesus said just the opposite. Give away everything you own. Take up your cross and come follow me. So apparently Rick Warren is of that group, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I have a hard time with religious people. I have a harder time with politicians who pander to religious people. Now, a lot of folks say, oh, Malloy, give it a break. You know, just because you're some damned atheist, it doesn't mean the rest of us are. No, that's not the issue. That's not the issue to me at all. Maybe that's how it comes across. But the idea of separation of church and state or separation of religion and politics should be, as far as I'm concerned, just cast in steel, in stainless steel. Now, I expect Republicans to show up for these, show up for these events where the evangelicals sit out in the audience and the preacher starts asking the questions. Republicans do that. They have been jerking evangelicals around for how many elections now? They continue to jerk evangelicals, and apparently the evangelicals love it. They don't mind being jerked around, and by someone like McCain, George W. Bush, Pappy Bush. Well, the evangelicals didn't like Pappy Bush too much, but politician after politician, doesn't have to just to be a presidential nominee or a president, Republican candidates, Republican office holders, or anything, just love to take the evangelicals and just jerk them this way, when I get elected, I'm going to appoint this and that and going to stop a woman from having a right to privacy. Yeah, when I get elected, I'm going to make sure the queers can't get married. Yeah, when I get elected, I'm going to abolish Social Security because that's what Jesus wants. Yeah, when I get elected, I'm going to make sure there's no single-payer health care because Jesus didn't have single-payer health care. You know, that kind of garbage crap. And the evangelicals sit there and just go, yep, that's good, that's good. We want to stay in poverty and ignorance as long as we can. Yep, we don't want any health care. We hate the queers. What about the Negroes? Can you put the Negroes in there too? No, we can't do that anymore. Okay. It's just disgusting to me, and it's sickening. This is not about spirituality. This is about the greatest con job in the history of the human race, and that is religion, which has nothing to do with spirituality. So when Barack Obama and John McCain agree to appear on the stage of this megachurch, which means it's crap and garbage, because, again, going back to Jesus, you know, the guy who started this, who said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church. What do you think Jesus would do if he came down to one of these 25,000-member convocations of people who think, I don't even know how to phrase it. It's so beyond belief. 25,000 people, that's not a church, that's a city. That's a corporate enterprise. I wouldn't be surprised if these mega churches don't have sweatshops in the basement where they have Ecuadorians down there busily making little dolls to export to China or something. It's insanity. It's insanity. This is not about spirituality. It's about control. It's about madness. It's just insane. So given where we are in this country right now, perfect time for McCain and Obama to show up. Obama should have said, are you out of your mind? You want me to come out there? I'll tell you what, I'll come out there. And then, yo, John, when we're finished sitting in front of all these white people, all these evangelicals, tell you what, you come to my neighborhood, McCain. How about that? This pastor I used to know, his name is Reverend Wright. Woo, he's hellacious. I'll tell you what, we'll get together on the stage of that church, McCain, and we'll do this all over again, and you can get in your dumbass little cone of silence, and then, you know, we'll get together and we'll have Reverend Wright ask some questions. We have all these black parishioners sitting out there going, when you answer the questions. I don't know what's wrong with Obama sometimes. You know, why didn't he just say to Rick Warren, look, hey, you seem like a nice guy, but no, I'm not going to play this nonsense.
But I can love my Jesus, and he can still love me. And kind of all I want to do is satisfy my Lord and be the bestest Christian boy. In all the whole wide world, I'll be a cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I'll live for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays.
And Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. So there they were at the Saddleback Church with Pastor Rick Warren, he who has written the mega bestseller, The Purpose-Driven Life. And as Robert Perry wrote today at Consortium News, millions of Americans who watched this, who watched Obama and McCain respond to nearly identical questions, were surely impressed by McCain's quick, sharp answers. Yeah. Quick, sharp? They don't work together in the same sentence that has the words John McCain. They just don't work together. So what happened? Well, you know, he was in... Who came up with this term, cone of silence? What the hell does that mean? Is that something from the space program? Is that something from Dianetics? Is that something, you know, when you get clear, do you go through the cone of silence? What the hell is a cone of silence? But anyway, that's where McCain was supposed to be, when in fact he was in a motorcade with his thugs for, what, the first hour? Oh, now nobody listened to anything. Please, we wouldn't cheat. We're Republicans. Huh? When he came on the set of the Saddleback Church, and he was asked by Pastor Rick about being in a cone of silence, he joked and he said, "Oh, my friends, I was trying to hear through the wall." And then he proceeded to knock the questions out of the park. That's not what McCain does. McCain can't find his ass with both hands when somebody's holding a roadmap in front of his face. Reach around. Now, pull your hands to your backside. You feel that? That is your ass. Do you understand, John? Well, my friends, I'm touching something, but I don't know what it is. No, that's not what... But McCain is not very sharp, to put it charitably. And today in the New York Times, I thought William Crystal was just, I felt like offering him a handful of Kleenex, after I finished reading his column. I've never seen somebody get so excited over what happened at this church. Hey, William, I don't know what happens when you go to temple, but usually when they go to church, they don't sit there and, you know, do whatever it was you thought must have been going on that got you so excited. I couldn't believe Crystal's column today. Good God in heaven, so to speak. In the same newspaper, of course, New York Times, the one where Crystal, for some reason, now sits like a spider in the corner and comes out every Monday to write his poison. I don't get that, New York Times. Oh, well, you're trying to be fair and balanced, right? In the same newspaper, the New York Times, reporters discovered that the assertion by Pastor Rick that McCain had been a cone of silence wasn't true. It just wasn't true. Now, Pastor Rick, it may be a lie on your part, an innocent lie, Or what would that be called? That would be called a sin of omission. Maybe you didn't know that Republicans cheat. They always have. They always will. The higher up the food chain you go, the more Republicans cheat. If it's a presidential Republican candidate, he will cheat on everything, including his wife. McCain's a liar and a cheat and a sneak, like all national Republicans, Pastor Rick. I realize you've been busy writing books and doing God's work as you see how to do it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But John McCain doesn't do that. John McCain is a Republican, which means, by definition, he is a liar, he is a sneak, and he is a cheat. So if you honestly believe, Pastor Rick, that he was in a cone of silence, where did that occur? Was that in his SUV? Was it in the passageway leading into the so-called green room at your church set place, whatever the hell that was, that you all did your thing? Now, of course, the McCain campaign is just slobbering all over itself. McCain spokeswoman Nicole Wallace, quoted in the Times, was it today? I think it was today. She said, "The insinuation from the Obama campaign that John McCain, a former prisoner of war, cheated is outrageous." A former prisoner of war. The idea that he cheated. I don't get the non sequitur there, Nicole. Why not say? The insinuation from the Obama campaign that John McCain, a former sufferer of athlete's foot, cheated is outrageous. What is the prisoner of war reference? What does that mean? Oh, my God. It just doesn't stop, huh? You know, if McCain did get pre-briefed in any manner on what questions to be expected, it's just like Ronald Reagan's campaign, when somebody in his campaign back in 1980 stole Jimmy Carter's debate briefing book and used it to coach Reagan's responses. I'm not saying Ronald Reagan was a sneak and a cheat and a liar, but somebody on his campaign was, right? Oh, so true.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know, someplace in the Constitution it talks about candidates for federal office, or any office, I guess, should have no religious test where it concerns their viability or their qualifications to run as a candidate. So why the pandering? You know, why does this happen? It's starting to sound, Reverend Barry Lynn, who's the executive director of the Americans United, that's Americans United for Separation of Church and State, said campaign 2008 is starting to feel like a Sunday school Bible drill. Reverend Lynn said, "I don't see what good it would do for the American people to again hear the candidates spout pious platitudes about their favorite Bible verses or how devout they are." Why does this happen? And why does someone like Barack Obama participate in this nonsense? Why? Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you know it or not, but about 250 or 300 of the people who were in the audience for this this event were charged anywhere from $500 to $2,000 per person to get in. Larry Ross, a spokesman for the church, said that was done to help defray expenses. Really? Didn't Rick Warren make about $30 or $40 million on the Purpose Driven Life? That goes to charity, though, right? I mean, what? $500 to $2,000 per person to go sit in a church. Hey, where's Jesus? Jesus! They're doing it again! Jesus! Anybody seen Jesus? Time to drive the money changers out of the temple again, JC. They just won't learn, will they? According to LA Times, a person who was at this event said, quote, it was courageous, a courageous step for Rick Warren that he stepped out and asked questions that represented us. Us? The woman quoted here is Pam Paul. A question that represented us. You mean us who attend church and think that there's a holy spook up in the sky who pushes buttons and does magical things and will give your baby cancer if you're not a good Christian? Is that what you're is that the us you're referring to? What us is this, Miss Paul? Paul said that she liked that McCain answered Warren's questions directly. Miss Paul said, quote, he solidified for me what I thought he was about, end quote. And then she said the character of a candidate was as important to her as issues like the economy and health care. Well, Miss Paul, may I suggest then that you take another look at John McCain, who is an adulterer? That's one of the Ten Commandments. He's a liar. That's another commandment, Miss Paul. He's a coward. He's a sneak. And he's a killer. Miss Paul, when you were a child, John McCain was bombing and burning to death women and children and old people in North Vietnam. It's about character? Well, then we know how you're going to vote. You're not going to vote for this ass, are you, Miss Paul? You see, just the mere appearance of these guys at a church gives the bobbleheads the idea, well, if our pastor puts him up there on the stage, he must be a good man, except for that Barack Obama. You know, he's a Muslim. I don't know why he's here in our church. Somebody get the fantastic out so that when he leaves, we can, you know, wipe it up because he's a Muslim. Jesus God. Oh, and by the way, the cone of silence. Thanks, everybody. Now, please stop. No more emails. It comes from the old Get Smart TV series. I had no idea. During the Get Smart era, what was I doing? I have no idea what I was doing, but I don't remember that part of it. I do remember the Get Smart series on television, but it was a cone that would come down over Don Adams when he had to talk to the home office, right? And it never worked. The cone of silence. Isn't that appropriate? Isn't that appropriate? Cone of silence. No religious test for elective office in the United States. And as far as the event itself, it occurred, what, Saturday? On Sunday, well, I was still in the hotel in Seattle waiting to, having breakfast, waiting for the car coming to pick us up. I watched some of this on television on CNN. And I was astonished that Barack Obama, when asked these questions, the questions were incredible. The one about Roe v. Wade, you know, the question about the A issue, you know, the A word, abortion. And Obama falls right into the trap and uses the expression that the pro-choice people use, and that is a woman's choice. A woman's choice. Why is it framed that way? And why haven't people who support a woman's right to privacy not realized that every time they talk about a woman's right to choose, it puts the woman in the mind of the right-wingers who are against abortion in the position of being, well, is she going to murder her child or isn't she? Well, I guess it's her choice. Oh, see? She's murdering her child. Why don't you people understand that the Roe v. Wade issue had not a damn thing to do with abortion and everything to do with privacy? That was the essential issue. That's what, well, wait a second, what am I doing? Barack Obama has already indicated, as have all of these bastards, that they're not interested in privacy anymore. The Fourth Amendment is gone. So if they can tap your phone, they can tap your uterus, right? I mean, it's that simple. If they can listen in on the conversations and the emails, they can listen in to what's passing between your umbilical cord, right? So never mind. But it would be refreshing just once to hear a politician not refer to a woman's right to choose. You choose when you decide whether or not you're going to have chocolate ice cream or butterscotch. That's a choice. If you decide to terminate a pregnancy, that is something that's done in a cone of privacy. And it's nobody's goddamn business. Nobody's. Certainly not the state. So once again, thanks, Barack. Of course, it's my fault. I saw you as a blank slate. I wrote whatever I wanted to on that blank slate. So every time you let me down, you're not letting me down. My bad. I'm letting myself down. You're like all the rest of them. You really are. You're a Democrat, but you're like you're a Clinton Democrat. You're a Kerry Democrat. You're just a plain old useless Democrat. Have at it, pal. Hope you win the election, because someplace around the corners and in the margins, as they say, I'm sure you'll be not quite as murderous and vile wrecking of the Constitution is John McCain. So, you know, go ahead. But just once, I like to hear these people talk about a woman's right to privacy rather than a woman's right to choose. What's it going to be today, baby? You going to let your kid live, or are you going to kill him? Here, look at these pictures. That's an aborted fetus. Ah, look at that! We live in an asylum, and you know that. And coming up, when I get to this Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady garbage, then you're going to realize how locked the asylum doors are. I used to think, well, okay, we're in an asylum, but, you know, we can escape on visiting, when there's visiting hours. You know, when somebody comes in to visit us, we can always escape. You know, when the Europeans come over and say, Jesus Christ, is this really your country? Oh, my God, really? Hey, you better come with me to Sweden, you know, out the door. Or somebody came from South America. Wow, is this how you people, holy Toledo, you want to come with me? Out the door. But when you have a Secretary of State who can sit there and talk about how she's not going to tolerate Russian, well, we'll get to a little bit later, but essentially Russian flights or Russian presence along the near borders of the United States, while the United States is surrounding the Russians. And then when the Russians react, oh, well, now that's going to have to stop. No, you're going to have to pull. We want all the troops out of there tomorrow. No wonder Putin is just looking at these American leaders and saying, are you just Britain's voice? What God rosen thee? Yes, you Britain's voice. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Muller. This is Nova M.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. You don't know what that sound is, do you? Well, I'll tell you a little bit later, or you can try to guess. You want to hear it one more time? Wait a minute.
Now, Mike, Molly needs to go back to bed. You got to stop waking her up.
Michael writes, greetings, Mike. I live in Anaheim, just a short distance down the freeway from Saddleback. The event was also broadcast live on local radio, so from the car to his sound room, McCain did not miss out on one question. No, of course not. Of course not. You know, this cone of silence nonsense or, you know, references to Maxwell Smart or whatever, you know, bat crap.
Well, maybe they just assumed his hearing aids were off.
Yeah, that could be. Sandy in Portland writes, Mike, we were focused on the Olympics Saturday and missed the original airing of Pastor Rick's Not-So-New Age Forum. However, in watching one of the ad nauseum reruns, it was apparent that the host and interviewer, Mr. Warren, didn't bother to take the time to focus on the four issues he had adamantly hawked prior to the show: poverty, HIV/AIDS, climate change, and human rights. Instead, we had the same old questions about abortion, stem cells, gay marriage, the Supreme Court, and so on and so on. In a post-event interview with BeliefNet.com, Pastor Rick said he simply ran out of time to cover those other issues and instead chose to let the candidates wax on. Oops. Yeah, right. One thing I want to see, but doubt I will, Sandy writes, is McCain being pressed to the hilt during one of the debates this fall about his absolute disdain for our troops and veterans, as evidenced by his voting record and rhetoric. Sandy in Portland. Well, those kinds of questions will not be asked of McCain. They might be asked of Obama, but who's going to ask those kinds of questions of McCain? Huh? Charlie Gibson? This is from Rob on Meet the Press yesterday. NBC's Andrea Mitchell stated, quote, the Obama people must feel that he didn't do quite as well as they might have wanted to do in that context, because what they're putting out privately is that McCain may not have been in the cone of silence and may have had some ability to overhear what the questions were to Obama, who went first. McCain seemed so well prepared, end quote. Members of the McCain campaign staff who flew here Sunday, flew where? From California, I guess New York, said Mr. McCain was in his motorcade on the way to the church as Mr. Obama was being interviewed by Reverend Rick Warren. The Times reported, interviewed Sunday on CNN, Mr. Warren seemed surprised to learn that Mr. McCain was not in the building during the Obama interview. Well, Pastor Rick, that just shows that when you have a 50,000 member behemoth that you call a church and the rest of us call a corporation, it's hard to keep track of things like where your guests are being are roosting, right? Oh my God! He was in a limo, couldn't hear a thing. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll believe that. Oh, sure. Well, it goes on and on at the New York Times blog. The consensus is, well, Catherine Seeley writing there says, it turned out that Reverend Rick gave both Senator Barack Obama and John McCain an advanced look at some of the questions he posed to them on Saturday night at Saddleback Church Forum in California, according to church officials. Now wait a minute. A spokesman for Pastor Rick said that Mr. Warren, Reverend Warren, Pastor Warren, Rick Warren, founding pastor of Saddleback, had assured both candidates in advance that he was not going to play gotcha with them. He gave them some of the questions because he wanted to put them at ease and alleviate any concern that the forum would be a, quote, Christian litmus test, end quote, for president. Oh, it wasn't a Christian litmus test? Really? Well, Pastor Rick, you sure as hell could have fooled me. I thought, matter of fact, I bet all those evangelicals sitting out there, and even the ones who didn't pay $2,000 for their seat, I'll betcha that they saw it as a Christian litmus test. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? Come on. Come on, Rick. Come on. Wow. On Thursday night, prior to the event, a spokesman for Pastor Rick said that Pastor Rick told Mr. Obama three of the questions he would be asking. What is your greatest moral failing? What is America's greatest moral failing? And who are the three people you rely on most for wise advice? On Friday, Mr. Warren gave the same three questions to Mr. McCain. Mr. Warren also told them the general categories of the questions, some of the broad themes, and that he would be asking about their tax policies. Their tax policies? Well, Reverend Rick, what's that got to do with the blessings of our Lord and Savior Jesus H. Christ? Tax policies? You're asking questions in a church about tax policies? Again, hold on just a minute, Rick. Jesus! Jesus, they're doing it again. This time it's Reverend Rick. Tax policies in the church. Jesus? Jesus? No answer. Okay. Well, I guess if Jesus could hear me, he would say, Mike, been there, done that. Got the T-shirt. It's a little bloody, but I got the T-shirt. Ain't doing it again. You crazy bastards on earth just can't take a joke. Goodbye. When Rick Warren did ask Mr. Obama, I love the way the New York Times writes, Mr. This, Mr. That, about getting the questions during the forum, Mr. Obama noted, quote, I cheated a little bit. I actually looked at this idea ahead of time, and I think it's a great idea. I don't know what the hell he's referring to. You see, that's why I should not take my eyes off of my prepared text and try to pretend. Oh, my God. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back, I hope, unless I'm struck by a bolt of lightning. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M radio network. Bear writes in, I'm very disappointed that Obama would feel the need to pander like this to the Pastor Rick thing. However, now that it's done, I think Obama should invite McBush to similar counters run by, one, Mensa, two, the ACLU, or three, the American Library Association. Yeah, indeed. So nobody's getting the sound, huh? This scared the hell out of me. When I was in Seattle, went to dinner with a moment with Bob and his wife and 8-year-old son. And we were in a Chinese restaurant. And Bob said, here, I've got some things for you. He has a couple of DVDs for me and a CD. And
you went in the kitchen and grabbed something from the freezer.
Right. Well, no, they were getting ready to lop this thing's head off and put it into the egg foo. No, we were sitting there waiting for food. And Bob said, well, here, you know, there's a couple of things for you. Gave me the CDs, and he gave me a little glass box with sand and seashells in it from Jude, and the Women's Standing Organization. Then he came out with this thing, and as soon as he came out with it, Nick, and I have to tell you, Bob's kid is just a gorgeous, gorgeous kid. I mean, good Lord. And I told Mom and Dad that too, you know, his parents. But so Nick was sitting there, 8-year-old Nick, just kind of sitting there waiting for dinner. We take Molly sometimes, and when we got to dinner with adults, and I know that feeling. Nick's sitting there going, "Oh my God, why am I here? Oh, they're going to talk about stuff." But anyway, when Bob reached in the bag and he came out with this thing, Nick stood up. And he said, "Dad, put it away." And I looked at it, and what it is, it's a little monkey. It's a little flying monkey with a little black cape and a little black mask on its eyes. It's about, how long is that, Kathy? About six, seven inches long. And it's got little, on its hands, it's got little pouches where you can put it on your fingertips. And like on your right hand, you put your first two fingers in there, and then you pull back on the body of it, and then when you let it go, it flies across the room. And as it flies across the room, it goes. Now, I have to say, we took it out. When we took it out in the restaurant, you know, and Nick was really scared of this thing. I can understand why. And we did it Bob did it just to show me what it was like. And as soon as he did it, the cook come running out of the kitchen. What's going on? What happened to my, did part of my dinner come out here? But we got it back. Anyway, when I brought it home, about 11 o'clock last night after I got off the plane, I came in and, Molly came to the airport with her mom to pick me up, and she slept all the way home. But we got home. And she woke up, and I showed this to her, and Molly, being Molly, just immediately wanted to take it apart. Let me see that. God. Oh, but I agree with Nick. It's scary. This is a scary little creature, and oh, that's. That's a very, very scary sound. So if Nick's listening, don't worry, Nick. We're going to murder this thing tonight a little bit later. And, speaking of that, we have a moment with Bob coming up a little bit later in the program tonight, so stick around for that. All right, I'm just about done with this event that occurred at Brokeback Church or Saddleback Church, whatever the hell. I'm sure Rick Warren is doing what he considers to be God's work, and I'm sure the 35,000 people who sign up to be in this congregation feel that they're doing God's work, too. I guess if you are part of Saddleback Church, you're home free. I don't know. I can't deal with it. Religion is not spirituality. Spirituality is not religion. And I don't say that. I mean, I'm just repeating what people a million times wiser than I have said for a long time. Religion is a con from top to bottom. It's a total scam. And I think anyone with the sense of a sack full of doorknobs could figure that out fairly quickly. Spirituality, on the other hand, is a whole different ballgame. But religion and spirituality got a divorce, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, and maybe even longer. And they're not on speaking terms and haven't been since. So I'm going to get away from that. It just pained me to see Barack Obama sitting there trying to answer questions that have no business in a political debate whatsoever. And that's what we're in. I don't care how they try to color it. Well, this gives me a chance to take a look into his character. You want to look at a candidate's character? Look at his voting record. Come on, don't be such a dumbass. And what difference does it make what a person's religious belief is? It was so important to the founders of this country to stay away from a person's personal religious beliefs that they made it part of the Constitution. There shall be no religious test. Oh, well, never mind. Forget it. But it's a shame to see... No. I guess it's only a shame because there's still a part of me that was surprised to see Barack Obama participating in the charade, and I shouldn't be surprised by that. I shouldn't be. Barack Obama is a corporate Democrat, and that's all we really need to know. Now, let's move on from the sublime to the murderously insane. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said today that Russia is playing what she calls a very dangerous game. Oh, my God. Yeah, Russia's playing a very dangerous game, the shoe lady says, with the U.S. and its allies, and warned that NATO will not allow Moscow to win in Georgia. You're not going to win in Georgia! You dirty goddamn commies, you're not going to win in Georgia! On her way to an emergency NATO foreign ministers meeting on the crisis that was stirred up, of course, by the U.S., Rice said the alliance, NATO, will punish Russia. We are going to punish Russia for its invasion of Georgia. Rice said, quote, We have to deny Russian strategic objectives, which are clearly to undermine Georgia's democracy, to use its military capability to damage and, in some cases, destroy Georgian infrastructure, and to try to weaken the Georgian state. Georgia's democracy? You're not serious, are you? Are you, shoe lady? Yeah, no, I know. You are serious. Democracy. Georgia's democracy. This is a country that has instituted under Saakashvili violent crackdowns on Georgian protesters. He got to office through a rigged election. What about his declaration of martial law, shoe lady? What about his attacks on opposition media, shoe lady? What about his jailing of political opponents, shoe lady? And you people in this filthy, corrupt Bush crime family have the audacity to refer to this. At least McCain refers to it as a tiny little democracy. It's a little, wee little democracy way over there in the mountains, a tiny, wee little democracy. To the shoe lady, to neocons, to Republicans, this is what a democracy is. It's an organization that condemns political opponents to prison, shuts down opposition media, practices torture, and steals elections. Why, hell yes.
To the shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the squalls of stand the scene, and I'm neither left or right. I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen.
I haven't given up on Russia. I still think Russia understands that it's in her interest to be West. I hear the voices.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
21 past the hour. So Condoleezza Rice says the Russians are playing a very dangerous game. She was on her way to this emergency NATO foreign ministers meeting on the crisis that was engineered by the neocons. Something I have to keep in mind: if the Israelis are going to attack Iran, they have to fly through Georgian airspace, and it would also behoove them to have availabilities in the Republic of Georgia for emergency landings if they needed. To do such a thing. The Americans don't need that. We'll have our warships positioned right off the coast of Iran. Hence, all the Israeli techies who were in Georgia when this thing went down. The Russians, you know, the Russians are not stupid. they may be a lot of things, but they're not stupid. But the Americans under George Bush, the American administration, this Bush crime family is stupid. So Rice is claiming NATO is going to punish Russia. And how, pray tell, are you going to do that, shoe lady? How are you going to do that? Rice could not say, according to the Associated Press, what NATO would eventually decide to do to the Ruskies. But she said that NATO would speak with one voice, quote, to clearly indicate that we are not accepting a new line, end quote. She means by that a new line through Europe, like an iron curtain or something. And at the same time, she said that by flexing its military muscle in Georgia, as well as elsewhere, including the resumption of what she calls Cold War-era strategic bomber patrols off the coast of Alaska, Russia was engaged in high-stakes brinkmanship that could backfire. This is madness. This is insanity. None of this had to happen. None of this. But these neocon sons of bitches who are determined to have war, are in clear control. Rice said of the flights along the coast of Alaska, quote, this is a very dangerous game and perhaps one the Russians want to reconsider. This is not something that is just cost-free. Nobody needs Russian strategic aviation along America's coast. Do you want to handle that, listener, truth seeker? Huh? The audacity of Rice to say this, and again, I'm not defending Russia. I think both countries are run by people who are just literally out of control, really, you know. But for her to make that kind of a statement, when we are trying to surround Russia with strategic, what amounts to strategic missile sites, the so-called you know, radar sites in case the Iranians or the Kazakhs or, I don't know who, in case somebody, maybe the Yemenis, you know, in case they launch, nuclear missiles, we'll have these radar stations all set up and we can strike very quickly, you know. And Putin's sitting there going, you people are out of your goddamn minds. You really are. Too much American television. You people are crazy. You're mad. You're insane. Here. Watch this. And then, you know, he gives a measured response with a lot of blood and a lot of death to what the Georgians did. And the Georgians came into Ossetia with a lot of blood and a lot of death. And now the Russians are sitting there going, what, you want us to leave? You're going to make us go home. Go ahead. Let's see, what are you going to do? We have been antagonizing Soviet Russia, or as it's developed now, capitalist Russia, oligarchical Russia. We have been antagonizing them. We have been shoving sharp instruments into every one of their body orifices now since what? 1989? Just pushing and beating and slapping and knocking around, going into their country, stealing everything we get our hands on, setting up a class of oligarchs who would steal for us, just on and on and on. Taking the equivalent of Mexico and Canada and Great Britain and France and saying, we're going to put you into NATO and we're going to surround the Russian bear. And you know, Putin is over there going, you know, this is madness. You people are out of your goddamn minds. We were willing to play. We were willing to play. We were willing to play nice. Just give us lots of Mercedes, lots of oil drilling equipment. Give us lots of gold in the bank. We're willing to play. But you've gone too far now. In Poland? Well, I was over the weekend. Poland said, where's the paper? Let me sign it right now. Oh, Jesus, let me sign it right now. That would be like what? Well, what would it be like? It would be like Mexico signing a mutual defense, wink, wink, nod, nod, pact with Russia in case we didn't allow enough Mexicans across the border, illegal or illegal. Then Mexico could turn to their buddies in Russia and say, okay, we're ready to attack Texas. These people are insane.
I'm plenty capable of conducting foreign policy for the United States in a way that reflects positively on my nation.
Yeah, how's that going? Huh? So Condoleezza Rice displaying what we talked about, or I blogged about, a week or two ago, the total ineffectiveness of this woman to do anything. The office of Secretary of State has been so totally subsumed into the office of the Vice President, along with just about every other office of government and every other branch of government. It is all Dick Cheney and the neocons. That's how it's been run for nearly the past 8 years. That's how it will continue to be run until these sons of bitches are finally turned out of office and hopefully brought to trial in a war crimes tribunal. Well, one can hope, right? But in the meantime, we have a Defense Department that was absolutely destroyed by Rumsfeld, a State Department just beaten into bloody pulp by the two losers that have run it, a Department of the Interior that has ceased to exist. I mean, just go on and on. Justice Department that was turned into a nest of whores, no offense to sex workers. Every single branch of government, whether it is a cabinet-level position, a regulatory agency, or the people who clean the hallways, every single branch has been corrupted by this Bush crime family. So why should Condoleezza Rice's little enterprise be any different? Oh, there she goes, jumping on her airplane, going to dash over to the minister's emergency meeting in Brussels. Okay, everybody sit down. Now, what are we going to talk about? Oh, yes, well, those dirty goddamn Russians. Now, what are we going to do about the Russians? I don't know. We can't let that know. Let's do something. I don't know. What do you want to do? I have no idea. Well, something has to be done. Yes, it must be done. It must be done. It must be done. I'm late. I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late. I'm late. I'm late. Gotta go. Gotta go. Gotta get this done. Hello. Hello. Follow the white rabbit. Brrr. Madness. Madness. So here she is on Meet the Press Sunday. We thought we would toss in a couple, three of these just for your evening's enjoyment. The shoe lady made the Sunday talk show surrogate to talk about Russia. And the unintended consequence of her appearance all over television was to remind the hapless American public how useless she really is. On Meet the Press, Press the Meat, whatever you want to call it, host David Gregory asked her why she didn't go directly to Russia. You know, go there instead of making a little side trip over there to Tbilisi to broker a ceasefire. Hey, why didn't you go to Russia? What's the matter with you? Huh? Go to Russia.
I went to Georgia to strongly support the democratically elected government of Georgia.
Oh.
To demonstrate that the Russian strategic intent of destroying the foundation of democracy in Georgia, the Russian strategic intent of destroying Georgian infrastructure and economic progress, that would not succeed. I was also able to assure the Georgians through clarifications by the French president that their interests would be protected in this ceasefire.
Shoe lady. Everything that you went to Georgia to make sure would not succeed, I hate to tell you this, is succeeding. And when you say you also were able to reassure the Georgians, yeah, they look real assured, don't they? Through clarifications by the French president? Aren't you the expert on Russia, shoe lady? Do you speak Russians? Russian? Do you speak the language? Clarifications by the French president. Let me guess. That means he did the actual explaining, not you. Is that right, shoe lady? Clarifications by the French president. Yeah, Madame Secretary, how do you want me to tell you the Russians? Okay. I do not know the Russian word for the American Secretary of State is a dumbass, but I will try to get this. You want Freedom Prize, right? Isn't that what you talked about? Freedom Prize? Guess what I'm going to tell the Russian. Clarifications by the French president that their interests would be protected, the Georgians, in a ceasefire. No, their interests are not being protected, shoe lady. As a matter of fact, the Russians are building missile-launching apparatus sites in Ossetia. And they are, you know, little strategic missiles, ones that will fall into Tbilisi as soon as the Russians decide it's time. You're doing a great job, shoe lady. Dick Gregory. Oh, my God. I didn't say that, did I? Yes, I did. David Gregory then underscored the shoe lady's total incompetence by quoting this from the New York Times. Do I say this? Gregory says to Condi, quote, "This is how the New York Times reported this week about a visit to Georgia back in July by you. This is what they said, Madam Secretary. Quote, during a private dinner in Tbilisi, Ms. Rice's aides say she warned President Mikhail Saakashvili of Georgia not to get into a military conflict with Georgia, or I should say with Russia, rather that Georgia could not win. She told him in no uncertain terms, still quoting from the Times, that he had to put a non-use of force pledge on the table, that the Georgian did. In the days since the simmering conflict between Russia and Georgia erupted into war, the Times went on, Bush administration officials have been adamant in asserting that they warned the government in Tbilisi not to let Moscow provoke it into a fight, and that they were surprised when their advice went unheeded, end quote, New York Times. So, David Gregory then said, Madam Secretary, did Georgia provoke this crisis?
This crisis has been going on for, as I said, more than a decade. It has been a hot zone and a volatile zone where there have been skirmishes over a significant period of time. It is absolutely the case that we have cautioned all parties against the use of force.
But this is a close U.S. ally, and you warned them, don't provoke the Russians. Don't do this.
David,
we have a lot of influence over them.
David, as I said, you can't just start with, we told the Georgians this. We also told the Russians not to engage in certain activities that they were engaging in. This was a zone of conflict. We were trying to do it peacefully.
Yeah, how's that working for you? So in other words, not just the Russians, but the Georgians told you to go pound sand into one or as many body orifices as you could find, right? Is that what you're saying, Madam Shoe Lady? You warned the Russians, you warned the Georgians, and they both said, piss off, we feel like fighting. Let's go. Break out the rockets and the tanks. Yeehaw! Is that what you're saying, shoe lady? God, you're an effective Secretary of State, aren't you? Huh? You're so good. Jesus, I hope Barack Obama did. Well, never mind. This exchange is kind of fun because it includes one of our favorite moron sounds from Chuckle Nuts and shows how Ms. Rice and the Bush crime family totally suck at foreign policy.
You talk about the tone of the U.S.-Russian relationship. This is how President Bush ushered in that relationship 7 years ago in Slovenia. Let's watch.
I looked the man in the eye. I found it to be very straightforward and trustworthy. We had a very good dialogue. I was able to get a sense of his soul. I wouldn't have invited him to my ranch if I didn't trust him.
Was that trust misplaced, Secretary Rice?
Look, it was absolutely the right thing to do, to give Russia a chance. It was the right thing to give Russia a chance to have a path toward integration into Western institutions, uh-huh. into a modern state, into responsible behavior in an international system, that's still the right path for Russia.
Yeah.
The fact that Russia, over the last several years, has demonstrated that it's not prepared to go fully on that path is Russia's choice. It was right to give them the choice. It is Russia that miscalculated. It is Russia that misjudged. And Russia is now seeing that the European Union and the United States will not tolerate the kind of behavior that they engaged in as the Soviet Union before the end of the Cold War. The Cold War is over.
The Cold War is over? Really? Then why are we setting up missile emplacements and radar emplacements all over the former sphere of influence, if you will, Madam Shoe Lady, of Russia, of the Soviet Union, the old Russian client states, not to mention parts of the old Union of Soviet Socialist Republics? If the Cold War is over, Madam Shoe Lady, what the hell are we doing building missile emplacement bases in Czechoslovakia, which is a country that doesn't exist anymore? Why are we doing that? And as far as the Russian military's actions in Ossetia, that sits wholly within the borders of Georgia, let me see if I can find a recent parallel of U.S. action. Think. I've got one. Serbia and Kosovo. Huh? How about that? If it is proper and correct for NATO to invade Serbia because, crimes against humanity are occurring, and if it is proper and correct for NATO to let the bombing spill out of Kosovo into Greater Serbia, and if it is correct, Madam Shoe Lady, to then work so that Kosovo can declare its independence, if all that is correct and proper and okay, how do you have the right to tell the Russians not to do exactly the same thing?
Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Cut my heel, had to cruise on back home. But there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render that frozen concoction that
ten before the hour. Let me share something with you from the online site, Pravda.ru. That's the English version of Pravda. It's written by Timothy Bancroft Hinchy, which doesn't sound like a Russian. As the U.S. Secretary of State got her cassette stuck, for a week now, she has been reiterating the same phrase, quote, Russian forces must leave Georgia now, end quote. And for a week now, the world has been informed of Georgian war crimes against Russians in Ossetia. The war crimes happened. The Russians call the shots now, Ms. Rice. Like it or lump it. Is Condoleezza Rice stupid? Okay, her boss is. We all know that, and that's why nobody pays any attention to what he says, or if they do, it is to have a good laugh at how such an imbecile could supposedly rule the roost in Washington. But everyone knows it's Cheney and his energy and arms lobbies. So Bush gets a discount, like the uncle that farts at family dinners, like the retarded nephew who belches swear words after his third liter of Coke, like the simpleton that sits outside the church on Sundays begging for money, informing everyone that he is an astronaut. Is Condoleezza Rice stupid? She claims to be a Russian expert, but her command of the language was recently exposed as being basic, if not simply elementary. It was exposed on a Russian radio program, just as her grasp of what is going on in Russia today seems beneath the informed blogger level. Is Condoleezza Rice stupid? How can this female purport to broker events between an evil regime in Tbilisi supported by her own evil regime in Washington and Russia, while not mentioning one single time the war crimes committed by Georgia against Russian peacekeepers and civilians? So we come to the conclusion that she is either stupid or incompetent or downright evil. If she didn't know about Georgia's war crimes when everyone else did, she's incompetent, as she proved as National Security Advisor right before 9/11. If she knows about the war crimes and fails to mention them as Secretary of State, she is plain stupid. And if she purposely covers them up, maybe because of her own armed forces were involved, then she is one evil piece of work, as many of us suspected all along. Is Condoleezza Rice stupid or incompetent or just plain evil? I don't know, Mr. Timothy. I have no idea. I just know that I live in the country and have to deal with the consequences of the policies of this corrupt administration. I live in the country that it controls, and I have to live with the consequences or emigrate. But you know what? There's a brighter day coming, right? There really is. When Obama becomes president, on the day after he is sworn in, he's going to sit down with a list that his staff has prepared for him. A list that details every single instance of U.S. constitutional laws and requirements being bypassed, subjugated, or ignored by the Bush crime family as they seek to put together a so-called unitary executive branch, which means a regency. And Barack Obama is going to sit there with a very, very sharp pencil or a magic marker or something, and he's going to check off all the things that he wants undone. Get rid of this, get rid of that. Get rid of this, get rid of that. Let's restore this to the Congress, restore this to the Department of Commerce, restore this to the Department of Energy. Put this back in the Secretary of State's office. Put this over here in the Department of the Interior. All right, recalculate these regulatory agencies. Get rid of all these people. Get rid of them. The Justice Department, okay. Start impeachment hearings against these five judges because they're obviously incompetent. All right, now over here, do this. That's what he's going to do, isn't he? Right? And all the damage that's been done by the Bush crime family is going to be undone by many, many, many strokes of the pen by President Barack Obama. In addition, Barack Obama is going to spend the second day after his inauguration on the telephone with our once and possibly future allies and say to them, first of all, let me deeply apologize for the past 8 years. We here in the United States have been under the control of a semi-fascistic regime. Those days are over. We are restoring democracy here. We're going to go back to honoring our agreements and treaties, and we're going to go back to respecting international law. And then on day three, after he has been sworn in, President Obama will ask for prime time on television, on all the networks. Fox won't show it. They'll be doing American Idol. But all the other networks and all the cable networks will show it. And Barack Obama will explain to the American people what he just did on day one and day two. Right? Right? That's going to happen, right? Hello? That will happen, won't it? All of those institutions that have been spit upon, set on fire, urinated on, ignored, destroyed, wounded, injured, will be made right by President Obama, because President Obama is going to say this is too much power for any executive to hold, including me. So it's all going back to where it belongs, in the Constitution, back to the regulatory agencies, back to the cabinet officers. That's what he's going to do, right? He will. Won't he? Huh? Won't President Obama do that? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a moment with Bob. A couple emails here pertaining to what we've been talking about. This is from Marvin in Pittsburgh, who writes, Mike, the following is some commentary from Pravda titled The Sheer Hypocrisy of Bush and Rice. I have no comment because the commentary speaks for itself. Here it is. Quote, they had the audacity to complain about Russia violating Georgia's frontiers when the U.S. Armed Forces invaded Iraq and slaughtered hundreds of thousands of civilians. They have the cheek to complain about Russian military operations when cluster bombs were dropped into civilian areas in Iraq, when prisoners were tortured at Abu Ghraib, when innocent people were rounded up and sent to the illegal concentration camp at Guantanamo, where they did not even have access to a due legal process. They have the sheer pig-headed arrogance to speak about the territorial integrity of Georgia when Iraq was invaded outside any norm of international law, its civilian structures were targeted with military hardware, and reconstruction contracts were doled out without tender to White House cronies. Suppose Russia claimed that it wanted regime change in Georgia, invaded the country, slaughtered hundreds of thousands of its citizens, deployed weapons of mass destruction in civilian areas, raped and tortured prisoners, caught Saakashvili and hanged him. Morally, Bush, Rice, and their entire odious and satanic regime would not be able to say a single word without the label hypocrisy choking them in their throats. End quote. The odious and satanic regime. This is what the Bush crime family has done. You know, one can say, well, Mike, come on, it's just the Russians. And what would that mean? It's not just the Russians. Just about every civilized country on earth has been saying this about us since the Bush crime family decided to do what it has done. I can't get my mind around it. We do the things we do. The foreign policy of the Bush crime family is as audacious and illegal and corrupt and as criminal as anything that the old Soviet Union did, as anything that the Germans under Hitler did. And yet, these thugs feel that after having committed war crime upon war crime, crime against humanity upon crime against humanity, that they, the Bush administration, can then step out and say to the Russians, you're going to retreat or there's going to be penalties. Oh, yeah, what? What are the penalties going to be? Are you going to start a goddamn nuclear holocaust? Is that what you're going to do, Condi? Huh? Is that what you're going to do, Cheney? I know that's what you would like, you miserable son of a bitch. I know that's what all you people would like. Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to launch World War III? Is that what you're going to do? You pigs had 20 years to help the Russians, to get rid of nuclear weapons on our side of the old Iron Curtain and on their side. You dirty, filthy pigs. You had every single chance to move this planet away from nuclear destruction. Every one of you neocon bastards. You had the chance. You had the opportunity. It was handed to you. And look what you've done. Look what you've done. Bruce writes, Mike, the Bush crime family is whining that the Russians have placed short-range ballistic missile batteries in South Ossetia within range of the Georgia capital. The Pentagon says this is to intimidate the Georgians, but they're already about as intimidated as they can be. What most likely has the Bush crime family upset is that these missiles make it impossible to use Georgia as an air base to attack Iran. Remember the war games Israel had a few months back where they did a long-distance air deployment? They said they went from Israel up past Turkey to simulate the trip to Iran. If you do that, you're in Georgia. That might explain the 1,000 Israeli technicians in Georgia. The Russians have been roving around Georgia looking for military infrastructure and blowing it up. Seems like a lot of trouble to go to for the size of the Georgian military. The Russians had already destroyed most of its equipment in South Ossetia. Could it be the infrastructure they've been destroying had Israeli Air Force markings? Bruce. And from Roger, quoting Secretary of Defense Gates, quote, Gates suggested that Russia's goal was not really peacekeeping and the protection of pro-Russian inhabitants of South Ossetia. Rather, he said, it was to send a message to Georgia and other former Soviet states that they should think twice before daring to try to integrate with the West. Gates suggests that's Russia's message. So Roger writes, now, let's get this straight. The United States has rights to control all territory surrounding Russia, while Russia has none. And the U.S. has a humongous sphere of influence, but the Russians are entitled to none. This kind of extreme irrationality on the part of the neocon idiots is the stuff of World War III. Curse the day they were born. How did we get people like this in positions of power? I'll tell you how. First of all, with the theft of the elections. And secondly, because you and I, well, not me, and not you specifically, but because America decided, well, elections, who cares? They're all the same. God damn. This is back before they really were all the same. I don't care. I don't like politics. I don't give a damn. Now, top of everything else, our good friend, not mine, I'm talking about the country's, Katrina Vandenheuvel, who is the editor of The Nation. She has an essay in the current issue. A little bit of it here. She says the U.S. media have failed to provide the full backdrop of what happened. For one, the role of Saakashvili, who has sought to provoke Moscow over a range of issues in recent years, his role has been whitewashed. Georgia's president has often seemed more intent on currying favor with the Bush administration, which has strongly supported Georgia's bid for NATO membership, than on looking at the interests of its people. The United States has also sent hundreds of military advisors to Georgia and welcomed Georgia troops in its so-called coalition of the willing in Iraq. The irony is that the Bush administration, which violated Iraq's sovereignty, now feigns outrage over Russia's actions. And for all the flowery talk of promoting Georgia's democracy, the Bush administration has in the past year downplayed Saakashvili's violent crackdown on Georgia protesters, his rigged elections, declaration of martial law, attacks on opposition media, and jailing of opponents. You see, McCain, yeah, that's a quote from Katrina Vandenhuvel. McCain refers to Georgia as the little democracy. Hey, little democracy. Hey, look at that little cute little democracy. Is that a democracy? And as we said last hour, in the minds of the neocons, that's what a democracy does. It tortures. It jails opponents. It toys with the idea of martial law. It attacks opposition media. It does everything it can and still parrots the line, oh, well, we support democracy. Democratic countries don't attack democratic countries. Yeah, we support democracy. The hypocrisy of this is just, it is lost on you and me. Well, not you and not me. It's lost on Americans. It is not lost on the rest of the world. And you know what? The rest of the world has just about had its guts full of us. It's just about had enough. We'll be back.
Of energy and one of the major.
Never mind. It's about 21 past the hour. I don't know what happened there, but never mind. Back to what Katrina Vandenhuvel wrote in The Nation, the current issue of The Nation. She mentions the fact that calls for sanctions against the Russians are. Or boycotts are hollow. I would take one step further and call them asinine. But Katrina writes, even if the United States were not already stretched to the breaking point in Iraq and Afghanistan, Bush administration policies have left us with no credibility in Moscow and therefore little diplomatic leverage. I mean, can you imagine what the whoever rules Russia now, other than Putin, whatever his clique of the ruling inner circle, they used to call it the Politburo. I don't know who runs Russia anymore. I have no idea. I should know, and I probably will try to find out. But can you imagine what they must think or what they're saying or, you know, crack open another bottle of vodka and listen to these dumbasses in the United States? Listen to what they're saying to us? Is this not a hoot? Can you imagine that's the conversation that goes around the table? Mark Ames at TheNation.com says this conflict exposes a clash between two fundamental principles of international relations. First of all, the right of nations to control territory within their borders versus the right of people to self-determination. Think about that one for a second. The West cannot simply claim the precedence of one principle, like self-determination in Kosovo, for example, and then assert that the other, national sovereignty in Georgia, without exposing its own hypocrisy and its own motivations, our motivations, based on power politics, that's what we're in this for. And it's not going to work. There are too many armed, insane people in this country now, or on this planet now. People like, let me think, Cheney. Whoever runs Russia, whoever's going to wind up running Pakistan now that Musharraf has left the auditorium. And now the Russians are calling the Georgians morons. According to CNN, Russia's president, who is as much the ruler of the country as Bush is the ruler of this country, Medvedev said, or he launched a verbal volley, is the way CNN puts it, at Georgia's leaders today. President Dmitry Medvedev said, quote, "The world has seen that even today there are political morons who are ready to kill innocent, defenseless people in order to satisfy their self-serving interests while compensating for their own inability to resolve complicated issues by using the most terrible solution, the extermination of an entire people," end quote. Who's he talking about? Huh? Is he talking about the United States? No, he's talking about the Georgians. And then he says, "I think that there should be no mercy for that. We will do our best not to let this crime go unpunished." And this is the leadership of Russia that Condoleezza Rice, the shoe lady, is attempting to intimidate by saying the Russians must pull back. The Russians must pull back. The Russians must leave. The Russians must stop. This has got to stop. Well, we insist. I'm going to meet with the foreign ministers in NATO, and we're going to stamp our little feet, and we're going to shake our fists, and we're going to say, you better pull back. You better pull back. You better pull back. And the Russians are going to listen to that? They're going to say, okay. No, they're playing the game. The Russian military says the withdrawal from Georgia has begun. Yeah, sure it is. The Russian Armed Forces Deputy Chief of Staff said today, quote, "We're talking about pulling our troops away to the borders of South Ossetia. Then they will not be on Georgian territory," end quote. You see, that's like saying, well, we're going to pull our troops back when we were bombing Central Europe. We're going to keep our troops in Kosovo, but that's not Serbian territory. Same thing. Same exact thing. Oh, man. Have I focused too much on this tonight? It's all part of the bigger picture of the utter bloody incompetence of these bastards. It's all part of the bigger picture. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we have a moment with Bob that we will get to. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 25 before the hour. All right, it is time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for a moment with Bob. The music makes you want to get out of your skin and run around to your bones, doesn't it? Hey, Mike. I had another epiphanette a couple of days ago. I'm a liberal, but I've voted like a Republican for almost 30 years. When it comes to presidential elections, you see, I vote out of fear, just like the Republican base. I'm afraid the Republican candidate will get elected and the Republican base is terrified the Democratic candidate will win. We all vote out of fear because we're convinced that only the other guy, or we're convinced that the other guy will ruin the country. The corporate powers that be yank everybody's chains, scare both sides silly, and laugh all the way to the bank. You know, the bank we just bailed out again. The Republican sneer and smear machine cranks out lies about the Democratic candidate. Millions were spent making sure the Republican base was aware of the non-existent facts about the worldwide drug smuggling ring headquartered in MENA, Arkansas, and the ominous Clinton body count. The swift boat veterans for truth trashed John Kerry because they were given bags of money from Republican deep pockets to lie about and destroy Kerry's military service. And this year, the right-wing noise machine will have spent millions more convincing the craziest Republicans that Obama will begin his inaugural address by shouting allegiances to Allah and conclude by quoting Cleavon Little from Blazing Saddles, "Where the white women at?" That's all the right wing has, money and lies, tons of money to spread the lies, to reverberate throughout the media. Corporate media love to move the sneers and smears down the food chain. It doesn't make any difference whether or not it's true. It's great copy and better television. But what about fear-mongering by the Democrats? 44 years ago, Lyndon Johnson's campaign produced an anti-Barry Goldwater spot showing a little girl picking and counting the petals of a daisy. When she reached 9, an ominous male voice began counting down, and when he reached 0, a flash, then a mushroom cloud filled the screen. Vote for Johnson, or the little girl and everybody else dies in a nuclear war. Pretty spooky stuff, but Goldwater once said, quote, "I could have ended the war in a month. I could have made North Korea look like a mud puddle." End quote. The difference between Democratic fear-mongering and Republican fear-mongering is that the Democrats don't have to lie. The truth about Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and George W. Bush is far scarier than any of the lies cooked up by the right-wing noise machine. They just never get any media coverage. Barack Obama can talk about hope and change from now until the election, but he's going to get millions of votes, not because of his message, but because there are a lot of people out there scared witless that John McCain will be a third term for the Bush regime. I put this question to friends and family. Why are you going to vote for Barack Obama? And the answer cannot be fear-based. As in, if I don't vote for Obama, McCain will do something bad, like put more conservatives on the Supreme Court, perpetual war for perpetual peace, yada, yada, yada. They don't have an answer because their primary reason for voting for Obama is out of fear of McCain. Now, I told you all that because I have another but similar question that took me completely out of fear-based presidential politics. Here it is. Can anyone tell me why a liberal should vote for Barack Obama? I'm a liberal and I really want to know. And why should I, as a liberal, have voted for any Democratic nominee for president since 1980? Don't regale me with the history of the Democratic Party. Don't bother telling me about how Democrats saved the country from the Great Depression, won World War II, gave us the GI Bill, and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Save your breath, because the Democratic Party was buried with George McGovern's anti-war candidacy by a landslide in 1972. The political hacks that crawled out from underneath the wreckage left the principles of the Democratic Party behind under the rubble and reinvented themselves as the new corporate Democratic Party. And the new corporate Democratic Party makes the same audacious assumption every 4 years, which is liberals must vote Democratic because where else are they going to go? The Democratic leadership blatantly uses liberal voters and discards them like used Kleenex if it looks like any of their liberal ideas might taint the campaign. Barack Obama was carried on the backs of liberals over the finish line during the primaries, and then he pulled a 180 on them. Screw the Fourth Amendment. Let's have more nuclear power plants. Call offshore drilling responsible domestic production of oil and natural gas. Using the word responsible makes it all sound greener than hell, doesn't it? Exxon's banking on it. I'm tired of listening to people praise the party that doesn't exist anymore and then try to explain away what the party leaders are presently doing. I'm tired of hearing, let's just have a huge Democratic win and then fix everything later. Everything on the liberal agenda can be on hold until after the election, like in 2006. When Democrats won and Nancy Pelosi, John Conyers, and Harry Reid sat on their goddamn hands and refused to stop war crimes? The Democrats over the last 30 years, the neo-Dems, the Vichy Dems, the craven spineless Dems, whatever you want to call them, have helped turn a conservative Supreme Court into an ultra-conservative Supreme Court, and I'm supposed to believe they wouldn't stand in the way of the super-duper conservative Supreme Court? All I know is that liberal square pegs don't fit in round Democratic holes. Liberals keep asking, pleading, begging, and wishing the Democratic Party would be something that it's not. I do the same thing just about every day. I wish my cat were a dog. To date, the cat has refused to cooperate. Somehow, the stranglehold of fear-based partisan politics has got to be broken. It divides the country and keeps us fighting the wrong enemy. Ourselves. Starting this election cycle, I'm going to kiss off spending any time, energy, or concern about participating in the insane presidential version of the Academy Awards. It's a rigged game, guys. Heads, the right wins. Tails, the liberals lose. Every single time. Who am I to hand out advice about presidential politics? Just another liberal sucker who's been played for a chump by Republicans and Democrats for most of my life. As Sam Goldwyn said, include me out. I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Oh, what to do, what to do, what to do. Have you heard about this? There's a poll. I just got this. Just got this tonight from Philip. It's in the Irish Times. One in two polls. Let's see. Click, 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 click. Gee, that's 50%. One in two polls fears that following the Georgia crisis, their country will be the target of a Russian attack. A new opinion poll is found. The poll in Waprost News Magazine comes ahead of tomorrow's visit by U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to Warsaw, where she will sign a deal to station part of Washington's new missile defense system in northern Poland. After a preliminary agreement was signed last week, leading Kremlin defense officials said that co-hosting the missile base would make Poland a Russian military target with, quote, 100% certainty, end quote. Oh, really? Man, I need to be living in Poland, right? The poll is featured in this week's Waprost, which portrays the Russian Prime Minister as Adolf Putin, with a side parting and Hitler-style toothbrush mustache. Half of the polls quizzed by the polling agency said they were afraid of a Russian attack. 38% saying, we are not afraid. 12% expressed no opinion. Of course, they were the dead people they talked to. But how could you not be afraid? You live in Poland? Do you know how many times Poland has been eaten up by either Germany or Russia? Mostly by Russia? I'm hungry tonight. What's for dinner? Poland. Oh, not again. I hate leftovers. The results of the poll reflected traditional Polish suspicions and historical fears of its larger eastern neighbor. Some 40% of respondents said they considered Russia to be Poland's greatest enemy. Well, okay, I have a question then, you guys. Hey, you Polish people? Hey, white people. And the Poles are definitely white. Hey, white people, hey, listen up. If you are so afraid, if you are this terrified, and God knows you have historical reason to be afraid of the bear, if you are so afraid, what are you doing putting in American missile defense systems? Huh? When the Russians have said, leave the defense systems alone, we leave you alone. put in the defense systems, maybe we get hungry again, eh?
You better thank God for that. Every time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy,
there's hope.
You said it, it'll drive you crazy,
there's hope.
I'm taking back my power today,
there's hope.
Gas prices, they just keep on rising,
there's hope.
The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can do.
Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget with Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Day, executive producer. And yes, I guess we're back online now, but we had major problems out in Phoenix. The phone company severed a line, I think. But I think it's been repaired now. So if you missed the entire program because you're listening online, I don't know what to say except, well, you can always download it tomorrow into your iPod. What? You're not a founding member? George Monpio, writing in The Guardian, says, it's a novel way to take your own life. Just as Russia demonstrated what happens to former minions that annoy it, Poland agrees to host a U.S. missile defense base. The Russians, as Poland expected, responded to this proposal by offering to turn the country into a parking lot. This proves that the missile defense system is necessary after all. It will stop the missiles. Russia will now aim at Poland, the Czech Republic, and the UK, in response to their involvement in the missile defense system. Now, of course, the American government insists that the interceptors, which will be stationed on the Baltic coast, have nothing to do with Russia. No! Their purpose is to defend Europe and the U.S. against the intercontinental ballistic missiles Iran and North Korea don't possess. This is why they're being placed in Poland, which, as every geography student in Texas knows, shares a border with both Iran and North Korea. It's just absolute madness. This is Saturday Night Live stuff, back when Saturday Night Live was still funny. This is television satire. This is insanity. This is craziness. Condoleezza Rice meeting with the NATO foreign ministers who have troops in Afghanistan. Which doesn't share a border with European countries. There's Condoleezza Rice. This is her glory moment, right? Isn't she the Soviet/Russian expert, right? Haven't we been told that? Doesn't her CV just completely lay her out as the expert in George Herbert Durbert's Bush's administration, and she's a visiting scholar to this place and that place, and former chancellor, or was it provost, or who cares, and just this multilingual, what does she speak? Well, she speaks English. Yeah, what else? French? Oh, good. What else? Russian? No, she doesn't. She's demonstrated that. So there is Condoleezza Rice. When the person we need right now, you know who we need right now handling these negotiations with the Russians in the first place? It never would have happened had Zbigniew Brzezinski been in charge. Well, wait a minute. He's Barack's foreign policy advisor, isn't he? You remember Zbig, don't you? He was the one that advocated arming the Mujahideen after the Russians invaded Afghanistan. Yes, let's arm the Mujahideen. We give them lots of missiles, and they will in turn... And they did. Zbigniew was right. enough Russian soldiers died in Afghanistan that the Russian mothers prevailed upon Gorbachev to end it, and end it he did. I believe it was Gorbachev. Was it a Gorbachev who finally pulled the plug? Huh? But we don't have Zabig. We have the shoe lady. The shoe lady. Prancing hither and yon. Brussels today. Paris tomorrow. Where the next day? Is she going to Moscow? And just when you thought, okay, they can't do any more damage. And as soon as Barack Obama's president, he's going to undo all the damage. He's going to unsign all the things that Bush has signed. So everything's okay. All's right with the world. We can all sleep peacefully. Right? You believe that? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, I believe that, Mike. Okay. And then what happens at the last possible minute? How much longer do these criminals, these war criminals, these slaughterers, these murderers, these liars have in office in the United States? How much longer? How much longer? 3 months? 4 months? I mean, you know, really in office. 5 months? How much longer? And they pull this.
Hey, I'll tell you what let's do. Things ain't screwed up enough for Barack. Let's restart the cold goddamn war.
How are you going to do that?
I know. Let's get the Georgians to invade Ossetia.
What?
Yeah, do that. There's a lot of Russians up there.
But.
No buts. Let's do it. Just tell the George, what's his name? Sokolashvili or something. Tell him, hey, we're behind you there, bro. Go ahead. We got your ass covered. And if we ain't got your ass covered, NATO does. Go ahead. Invade Ossetia.
But Ossetia's full of Russians.
That's my point.
But not only will that restart the Cold War, it might lead to a thermonuclear exchange.
Yeah, goddamn it, wouldn't that be great? Huh? Oh, Jesus, can you see the rocket's red glare? Man, let's go for it. Let me plug Dick in. Dick, come over here.
Yeah, what do you want?
We're about to start World War 7-3, whatever.
Good, go ahead. I don't give a goddamn. Now get out of my face.
All right, here we go, boys. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.